Welcome to episode 439 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we feature a fabulous conversation with photographer, educator, and artist Nico Galionyotis. He speaks with us from his home in Athens, Greece, and we talk about his journey from Greece to the U.S. and back, how he looks at his immigration, socioeconomic differences in rural America as compared to rural Greece, his book, America in a Trance, what inspires him, coping through photography, the vaccinated and the unvaccinated, going into the hearts of where the problems are, and a mirror of himself, a grand conversation with Nico Galionyotis on this week's episode. We have an EW essay titled Ambient, and our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, shares the second installment of his Watch the Ice essay series, featuring actor Dominic Azzarelli. And we have a poem called Tea. All of this is imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. Let's get to it. Episode 439 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay. Come on and fly with me, let's fly away. Come fly with me, let's float down to Peru. In Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and he'll toot his flute for you. Come on, fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so near, you may hear all the angels cheer, because we're together weather-wise. It's such a lovely day. Just say the words and we'll beat the birds down to Acapulco Bay. It is perfect for a flying honeymoon. They say, come fly with me, let's fly away. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide starry-eyed. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so very near, you might even hear a whole gang of cheers, just because we're together weather-wise. It's such a cuckoo day. You just say those words and we'll take our birds down to Acapulco Bay. It's so perfect for a flying honeymoon. Oh, babe, come fly with me. Let's fly, let's fly. Pack up, let's fly away.
pack a small bag.
Ambient. Waking to a wind blowing while the sun is slowly rising transforms my thought scheme into an array of arrangements intended to direct through the maze of the day ahead. I dreamt last night that I had an argument with a young, arrogant manager at a Walmart. There were big dollies, black and blue. There were yellow-painted steel poles cemented in the ground to guide us through. His middle-aged workers caroused the front dock as I inquired about some aspect of what I was looking for at his company's front door. He basically, smugly, demurred. I walked away into what now I recall as a bit of an abyss on the way back to my vehicle. Inside, I rustled with its doors open while I stood outside in the sparsely populated parking lot. It was dark, some light, ambient, from the lighted gray poles sporadically placed on the asphalt expanse as per the standard corporate landscape design. I was looking through stacks, loose and in bags, inside hard plastic pockets in the doors and softer ones on the backs of the seats, in the glove box, and through some sort of new design of dashboard, affixed sinusoidal wire-bent sleeves. I could not find a particular pair of glasses. Where could they be? Brown in a few tones, with touches of black, in a pattern such as what you might see in a pile of autumn leaves from an old fruit tree in the mist of dusk, or perhaps twilight.
For your next climb, the things I want don't take time or money. Yeah, honey, you'll get it one of these days. One of these days, love ignites. We're gonna get it and get it right. One of these days. If I'm talking sweet to you, you know I'd like to hear it too. It's funny, yeah, honey. Feel alone in the morning dew. I start to see new shades of blue. One of these days, you know I'm gonna set our hearts ablaze. If it's my last living deal, if I feel I love and fade, you may as well turn the blade. It's a running a hun in my mouth, I know for days. I've been singing the same old song and I ain't doing nothing wrong. One of these days, you know I'm gonna set our hearts ablaze. If it's the last thing I do.
Hello?
Hello, Nico. Is that you?
It is actually me, Lawrence. How are you?
Good, good. It's nice to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours.
Excellent. Thank you for inviting me. Although I'm about 5,000-6,000 miles away, it feels like being there with you.
It's amazing technology, isn't it?
For the most part.
Well, before we get started, the reference that Nico was making is he's talking with us from Athens, Greece, and I'd like to share a little background information. Nico Kalianiotis is an educator, a photographer based in Athens and the United States. His formative years were spent in Greece, but for all of his adulthood, he has lived and worked in the United States. Because of his hybrid background, he views the world and his surrounding environment from two different perspectives, both culturally and socially. Nico started his career as a newspaper photographer, first as a freelancer at the Times Leader in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and then as a staff photographer for Gannett Newspapers in Ohio and the Watertown Daily Times in Watertown, New York. Nico is a contributor for the New York Times. He has been featured in Esquire magazine, the PBS NewsHour, and Vice magazine. He has taught at Drexel University in Philadelphia, Marywood University, and the University of Scranton, both in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He is also the co-founder of the Rust Belt Biennial. Troubadours and Rock on Tours is happy to have on the program, straight from Athens, Greece, Nico Kalianiotis.
You pronounced it perfectly.
Well, thank you. You know, I was practicing. So let's get right into it. I mean, tell us about growing up in Greece and why you moved to the United States of America. How that all happened?
Well, it goes back to late 70s, early 80s. I'm actually speaking to you from the apartment, the area that I grew up, and my father moved to the United States in 1979 for his master's and PhDs and economics and all that good stuff. And then I resented, believe it or not, the idea of moving to another country that I was not familiar with, which was an interesting concept after the photography developed and my immersion into the American culture. So I was going back and forth in the early 80s, but in long story short, 1998, I believe, or late 97, I decided to move to Pennsylvania and study photography. My father initially moved to New York City. And of all places, you would think that people from Europe would love to go live in New York City. Not me. You know, we have my friends here, a different way of life. And for a weird reason, I did my MFA in New York. I worked there. I lived there. But every time I go there, I want to get out of there. It's not my place because it was my first experience with the United States. So you're taking a kid from Greece, dropping him in Queens. So it's a little bit, it's a little bit very surreal.
Oh, yeah.
And then from Pennsylvania, I went to Ohio, upstate New York. Basically, I decided to move to the United States because my family was kind of torn apart because I didn't want to be in the United States. My father had a job there. My mom was going back and forth. My dad was doing the same thing. So I'm like, okay, let me give it a try. So that's basically how the journey started. But it was a difficult one. And till this day, it is it's a little complicated as to the relationship you're establishing with a particular place, whether it's your home in Greece, in Athens, Greece, or Scranton, Pennsylvania, or Philadelphia, where I worked, or New York. So it's a little mysterious. And the reason for this is because I consider myself an immigrant, but I don't consider myself an immigrant that I left my country due to economic hardship per se, because there was like a war, etc. So I had to go to another country. it was basically a decision that was based on family, on, you know, being united at that point.
Yeah, you were a kid. You really didn't have a choice.
Well, yeah, I did, though, because I came back. I left my family, and I came back when I was, like, 16. I survived for about a year, and then I went back. And it was very, very, very complicated.
Now how did you get from Queens to northeastern Pennsylvania?
It's very interesting. My father took a teaching position at the University of Scranton, where he's still teaching economics since 91, I believe. And that was a shock, because that was a second experience from the country. The first one was in New York. And, you know, you can handle New York. I mean, it's a metropolis. Everybody wants to be there. There's stuff to do. And then I remember that I visited Scranton for Christmas sometime in the mid-90s, and I left. It was shocking to me, because you're talking about pre-internet era. And in one of my statements and other interviews and with friends, I discussed that when you live outside of the United States back in those days, you experience the United States from the movies, right?
Right.
I mean, there's internet, there's no Facebook, there's nothing. So you're experiencing, you have this idea about America and what America is or isn't from films. So you don't know about Pennsylvania, Scranton, Pennsylvania. You're familiar from about Philadelphia because Bruce Willis made a movie or two there, but you're not exposed to rural America, which it ended up being my passion. And, you know, I love rural America. I love Pennsylvania, like outside of the metropolis, where the heart of America really is.
Is it more like what you have experienced in Greece? Is that why?
Well, I live in Athens. Athens is pretty big. It's about six million people. But I also visit cousins and grandmothers at that point. I go to rural Greece as well. There's a fundamental difference, though, and a very socioeconomic difference between those two worlds about rural America and rural Greece. For the most part, up until now, you go to a town of a little village of 3,000-4,000 people in Greece, and you have a main street. And you have a main street with family business that they're doing very well. You have coffee bars, you have restaurants, you have a lot of life going on. And you go, unfortunately, to Western Pennsylvania or Eastern Pennsylvania, the small towns, and it's pretty desolate. And that's a shame. That's a whole different conversation that kind of relates to one of the American and trans questions.
Right, and it's probably because of, you know, the big box retailers and that sort of economic. Your dad is an expert on this. I'm sure you guys have fascinating conversations in this area. That put out of business the small, unique, as we call it, mom and pop stores that I guess maybe in Greece still have a means to exist economically.
Absolutely, and the difference is that obviously, you don't have the industry in Greece that you have in the United States or you had in the United States, but there's still some production. I think the values are a little bit different. People are not buying to the idea of the huge malls, although you do have malls here. But there's still, you know, if you want to buy, you know, something, you were going to go to Costas, whatever, for example, and buy something from your neighborhood shop. It still exists in Athens, obviously, but it's fascinating that you see this in very small towns. And because you mentioned about the conversation with my father, and this is something from my personal experience working as a newspaper photographer, but also working on projects, is that you can only go so far with services. If you have no industry, whatever their industry is, it's not going to get you somewhere, you know? It's, mm-hmm. And then you have the malls and you have the mom and pop shops, stores closed. I don't know. You're more familiar with this than me, I think. But I kind of experienced that whole system from within. And I was very fortunate that I lived in Pennsylvania. Whereas there's people in New York City or other big areas that they comment on those regions and they judge their political values and personal values, whatever, but from they do that from a distance.
Right.
Don't really go into the heart of the situation. And then things will start to clear up as to why some folks are moving towards a political direction. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned northeastern Pennsylvania. You worked in Wilkes-Barre, Luzerne County. They have a lot of issues with the government, given the high support of the Trump movement, if you want to call it that. But, that's a whole other discussion, as you mentioned. And we want to focus a bit more, and maybe we'll get into that through your discussion of the newest, I think this is your newest work, right? America in Trance.
America in a Trance is my first, was my first book that was published by Damiani in 2018.
Oh, 2018. Okay.
2018. And I was fortunate that it got national, international recognition. And it's basically all of the images are made throughout the state of Pennsylvania. And it was a form, it was a cathartic form for me. It was basically both a window and a mirror into kind of assimilating myself with the place and the idea of living in Pennsylvania. And there were pockets of the state and sometimes through color and light that were reminiscent of the atmosphere of Greece. But the whole process for me was about the idea of contenting with me being away from home. But through it, I experienced the socioeconomic struggles. I met a lot of interesting people, although I kept my distance. You don't see intimacy with a human element in the book, with the exception of a couple of photos, but the conversations and the experiences I had in between those images were invaluable to me in developing an understanding by personally inquiring, not by preconceived ideas about allocation.
Well, now, when you talk about, first of all, again, this is a book of photographs, for people to be clear, and your photographs are brilliant. I'm looking at them now as we speak. America in a Trance, why that title?
Why that title? Because trance is this kind of state that you are aware that things are happening, but you're not really able to respond. So I thought that I fit very well into that description of, like, I'm aware. I really know what I want, but at that particular time, I cannot achieve it, or some life issues don't let me get to my goals. And I thought that was the state of America at the time. It's almost like I'm trying to find my identity or maintain my identity. And I felt, and this is all by experience, that the state was also at the same situation. And it had some broader meaning. Pennsylvania was just the foundation of everything else. Like, the project was made in Pennsylvania, but I think this applies to all the former industrial regions, but also some metropolis, because some of the images are made in Philadelphia in the book. So it's kind of have this uniform feel to it. And I believe it's, considering what we go through right now, I think we're all in the trance at this moment.
You mean the pandemic and social strife?
Everything that is happening, I think nobody really knows what's going on. That's my interpretation of things, including me and the situation in Greece and everywhere else.
Yeah, are you concerned?
I am, but the strongest weapon I have for me to be able to survive through this on a personal and also universal level is my photography. And I'm being very honest with you on this, that the photographs might be aesthetically pleasing and interesting to look at, but to me are just an excuse to cope with all these things that are happening and that have happened in my life, but also into the society and the environments that I reside. That's why I'm concentrating on working on the American and the Greek social landscape. I don't go to photograph in India or Italy. I just can't. It doesn't mean anything to me. There's no intimate connection. There's no chemistry of me photographing somewhere else. But I don't want to be pessimistic. I just think that we need to engage into, you know, a more in-depth conversation about where are we going and accepting each other, which is the most important thing. And, you know, listen, to give you an example, considering the pandemic, there's people that they're we have like the vaccinated and unvaccinated mm-hmm. war. And that is scary.
It is. You know?
That is socially very, very dangerous territory. But hey, you know.
Is that going on there as well in Athens?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Same reasoning? They don't trust the vaccination, or is it a political choice?
Same reasoning. Some of it is political because the parties here are more in like a football team or a basketball team. You don't have a lot of people changing sides for the most part. It's not rigid, but it's very strong. I mean, you have I was actually been to a couple of protests that's been happening. It's like an weekly, bi-weekly event here. Yeah, protests and riots in Athens. I mean, you Google it, it will be, yeah, it's like, okay, you have the tourists taking pictures of the Parthenon, and then you have Molotov cocktails downtown. So it all works out. But back to your question, Lawrence, I don't know. I'm hopeful because I really believe in human communications. And I think through my experience and my photography, I came to this realization that you have to go really into the heart of whatever those problems are, or even if you are worried about a particular group of people or areas, people need to go experience them themselves. Whether you agree with them or not, it's irrelevant. I considered the American and Trans book, and also my other work in the editorial world, an educational experience.
Oh, of course. Yeah, and it seems you're seeking that. As you said, you're coping through your photography. I guess for you, I mean, this is a large part of who you are. You're an artist, you're a photographer, and this is the way it seems you connect with these eternal questions and struggles of humanity through visual.
It is. And also back to the work in the book was a very difficult emotionally for me. I don't know where you're from, but I remember the first time that I went to Western Pennsylvania, south of Pittsburgh by the Ohio River. And it was my first experience with that part of the state. And I remember I entered McKeesport, and once I got into the town, I pulled the car to the side, and I was looking at a bus stop with the people and the buildings and the houses. And I was there for 45 minutes. I didn't even take a picture. I was asking myself, am I in the United States? Because when people talked about a social economic decline in Greece, which happened around 2008-2010, this was not comparable. I thought I was on another planet.
It was worse than what you experienced in Greece?
Oh my God, Western, you don't see this here. I mean, there's great economic depression. I mean, the salaries are not comparable to the United States, but then the goods are cheaper. But for the most part, it's a different mentality. But you're talking about a powerful country, okay? Here in Greece, you have been through occupations, World War One, World War Two, civil wars. I mean, it's a mess. But I remember asking myself this question, what has happened? And, you know, back to your question earlier about, you know, if I'm worried, the question I have is, where are we going? If things were going well at one time, what has changed, and what is this progress that we're talking about, and are we ever going to get there when you have areas with a lot of problems? And I use the camera as an excuse to go there and experience those places. But I also go there without a camera, just to have more intimacy with the place and, you know, myself.
You have me curious as to when you were in Western Pennsylvania and you were struck by what you were seeing. What were you seeing? What was so compelling and so provocative?
Well, that place in particular, McKeesport, it feels like if you walk into the city, it feels like an alien force landed. Everybody run, left their houses, and there's just nothing. There's nothing there. But what was interesting is that I would travel 10, 20 minutes down another town, and you have that main street that I was talking about earlier, and it was alive. Most people shopping, it was family stores open. And I asked I called a friend of mine, a photographer in Pennsylvania, Mike Froyo, that he's been photographing the railroads in Pennsylvania, great work. I said, Mike, I'm in this place. He's like, oh yeah, that's because the plant is still open. So you have a whole community that is happening. You have your industry, then the people that work within those industries, they can support the local economy. Mm-hmm. Now, mm-hmm. A lot of people are going to argue this with the environment. Well, yeah, sure. I personally believe everybody cares about the environment for the most part, okay? But how do you sustain that system in order for the people to be able to afford sending their kids to college without getting a federal loan or a bank loan for that matter?
Right.
And I'm talking for experiences about college loans.
I hear you. Believe me.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
We're talking with Nico Kalianiotis, right?
Correct.
From his home in Athens, Greece, about his philosophy as a citizen, as an artist, as a photographer, and some of the things I guess he sees and is hopeful and concerned about in society, where photography, again, is what helps him cope. And I look at your work, again, I'm looking at it now, and it is very powerful. And there aren't many human beings in these photographs I'm looking at from the book America in a Trance. I see one with a gentleman without a shirt on sitting on a front porch in the sun. But other than that, it's just pictures of the community, of streets, of buildings, and the lighting, you know, is wonderful. A lot of it does look like aliens came in and everybody ran away, or a little down economically. But also some of it looks very quaint and charming. I guess that you'll find pockets of this in America as you travel down the road.
Correct. And you raise a good point, because throughout the photographic medium, the ruin porn, as we call it in photography, there's a lot of photos that you see that are from a lot of desolate buildings and destruction. And I do have some references to that, but I didn't want to make it so obvious. I wanted to be a little bit more lyrical. And the reason the people are so pushed out in the frame was kind of like an intuitive process, because I wanted to unite the people with the landscape. It was also a mirror of myself. Like, I would see me in those people walking the streets of Scranton, and somebody else might be photographing me from 300 feet away or 200 feet away. And that is why it kind of I approached it that way. There was no plan. It was very, very emotional to me and intuitive, and there was no concept in terms of I have to photograph this. Every place that I went, the only research I did was how to get there and what other towns I will find on my way, because again, I wanted to learn by experience and not by what some article will tell me or news organization or a friend of mine. But there is this sense that you have this quaint layer that exists in the work, but at the same time, there's a sense of hope. And somebody told me in an exhibition I had in Penn State University in Reading, and the same comment happened in Greece in another exhibition. That was about between 17 and 18. And they told me, your pictures are clean. And I go, what do you mean my pictures are clean? Are you talking about composition and, you know, focus and all that? He's like, no. Your pictures are clean. There's no garbage on the streets. And I go, what? And I went back to the images. There's not a single paper on any of those streets. You have the nice color. People try to maintain their homes. There's only one picture that has garbage on its side, and that's one from the railroad tracks at the crossing through Scranton. But if you look at all the other images in the book, there's no garbage. It's very, very, very clean. So I use that as a positive note. Okay, so yeah, you have the socioeconomic decline, but at the same time, I'm hopeful for something, or the people are hopeful. There was a sense of
pride,
maintaining the community, taking care of it.
Yeah, I love it. I'm looking again as we speak at the photos. There's a very beautiful photo of a man in a wheelchair and a woman standing in front of a car with the hood open, and mm-hmm. a building in the background, garage door open with the car in the garage. It's wonderful. There's so much going on there. Yeah. It really, I guess, you say you want to experience America, community, Greece, community directly. You don't want to read about what's going on or hear about what's going on from other people. And I guess for you, seeing is believing, and you can interpret a lot from what you actually see.
Mm-hmm. And it's also the experience that I think that you look at, whether you're a photographer or not, you are looking at a photograph. And for me, the photograph works if you really feel the photographer's soul into those photos. And I don't know if my photos do that or not, but when I look at work, I want to see the photographer into the picture. Not in the sense that, yeah, he took the picture, he might be interested in the subject, or because it's aesthetically pleasing and compelling. I'm not interested in all that. The only reason that you see, hopefully, well-composed photographs with good light and color, all of this to me is irrelevant, because I was trained that way, because I went to a fine arts school and studied photography, and then I worked in a very good newspaper, one of the very good newspapers, the Watertown Daily Times, upstate New York, that had an amazing photo editor, so aesthetics was key. So all of this is automatic. The moment I pick up the camera, within 3-4 seconds, I know how I'm going to frame, what lens I'm going to use. It's all done. But it's an introduction to something else, to the narratives that might exist, to the references, to the conversation that you can look at the photo and say, okay, great color, great composition, amazing light, interesting subject matter, interesting character. But what else is going on there? Even the person without a shirt, I mean, okay, why is he there? Study the picture. There's a bank in the background, a do not enter sign. And the story about this guy is that I photographed him about 13 years ago, believe it or not, black and white. He was doing the exact same thing. And I was traveling, I believe it was 2018, in Scranton looking for pictures. And I see him at the same porch, and I'm like, it cannot be happening. It was the same guy, same position, and he remembered me. I went back, I found the black and white frame, I took it to him. He had 3 restaurants in town, in Scranton, that because of the situation, they were gone. But so it's all this, it's the first step to a broader dialogue that I think we need to engage with.
Well said. Well said. Nico, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I mean, we're just about done for this go around. We can hopefully talk again in the future. I love your work. If anybody wants to check out what Nico has been producing over the years, he has you can just Google him, Niko J period is his middle initial, then K A L L I A N I O T I S. Kelly Aniotis.
You got it. And also to close, the project that I'm working right now is about the city of Athens, but also the extended territories. And If America in a Trance was about me leaving home and trying to assimilate with the United States, the project about Greece and the upcoming book is about coming home. So it's kind of like a mirror of these two.
Wonderful. I can't wait. When will that be ready?
I'm still working on it. Hopefully the next year it should be published, but we're still working on it, still photographing the last 3-4 years. So it's been going good, I think.
I can't wait to see it.
All right, Lawrence.
Thank you so much for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. And when you're ready, let's talk about that project.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
When was the last time you saw your reflection? When was the last time you pulled back the shade? When was the last time you cured your infection? When was the last time that you weren't afraid? Think real hard. Think real hard. When was the last time you saw your own star? That funny feeling when you wonder how far, how many circles and hours and days. When was the last time you floated away? Think real hard. Think real hard. You know it's true. You know it's true. When was the last time you looked at you? You know it's true. Bacteria, invisible, living under the chemicals, like heartbreak woven into the clothes we got used to. When was the last time you saw your own blood? When was the last time that you had a clue? Did you ever take something you wanted? Something that didn't belong to you? You know it's true. You know it's true. When was the last time you looked at you? You know it's true. You know it's true. Yeah, you know it's true. When was the last time you looked at you? You know it's true.
Smoked? Sure, I smoked. Smoked for years and years. Pall Malls at first. Unfiltered. Real killers. Then filtered Camels. Remember Joe Camel? Had a great Joe Camel t-shirt. Saved up coupons from the packs. And I moved to Menthols. Kools. That was my last brand, Kools. Whole family smoked. Father, grandfathers, grandmothers, aunts, uncles. The only holdout was my mother. She used to pretend to cough every time my dad lit up in front of her. And he lit up one all the time, so she was always pretend coughing. And then she'd tisk-tisk under her breath. She was always tisk-tisking, too. And constantly emptying ashtrays and rolling her eyes and sighing. My father ignored her, which he pretty much did all the time anyway. He was good at ignoring people. especially my mother. My mother hated smokers. She wasn't too crazy about my father. They didn't speak to each other much, and when they did, he'd yell and she'd cry. The kids would run outside or hide upstairs until it was quiet again. You know, a messed up family. Like most of them, no matter how nice and normal a family seems, they're messed up somehow, some way, for sure. Dad smoked Lucky Strikes. Started smoking them when he was a kid. And was a nicotine fiend by the time he joined the Army. Then he got out of the Army and he married my mom. He kept on puffing away, all through the years of work at a factory, and then through his short retirement. He could finally relax, but couldn't breathe. Emphysema. All that crap he was breathing in every day at the factory didn't help, of course. Angry guy. Used to come home from work, open a quart of beer, light up a smoke, and stew. And if one of the kids upset his stewing, there'd be hell to pay. Sure, he hit me when he could catch me. He hit all the kids. Now and then he'd hit Mom, and there would be tears behind the bedroom door. Then he'd come out, sit down, start stewing again. A little while later, she'd come out and begin making dinner. Mom died first. Never smoked. Didn't drink much. Glass of wine on a holiday or birthday. Never sick a day in her life. Cancer. Then Dad died. Then the aunts and uncles. Not all from smoking, of course. Lots of ways to die. Don't have to tell you. So yeah, I smoked. Started when I was young. And like Dad, all my friends smoked. Everyone smoked in the movies and on TV. John Wayne smoked. Remember him? Used to watch him in westerns on afternoon TV. The gun is mine. The bullets belong to him. He can come get them anytime. Loved John Wayne. Dad loved him too. The Duke. That's what they called him. The Duke got cancer and died too. Now that I think about it, smoking was a big part of my life. We smoked before school when we were kids. We smoked after school. And then we'd sneak off to smoke at night. We'd smoke on dates. We'd smoke at work. We'd smoke at the bars. We'd smoke on the street after the bars were closed. We'd smoke in the morning with our first cup of coffee. And we'd smoke one last one before we fell asleep. Over the years, one by one, we quit. I quit a long time ago. Expensive, nasty habit, as my mother used to say. Finally realized that on my own. Some of my buddies kept at it right to the end. My buddy Nobby O'Malley, for example. Hacking and wheezing his whole sorry life. The last time I saw him, alive that is, he was grinning and lighting up a butt. Man, what a depressing subject. Why are we talking about this anyway? Oh yeah, you asked me. Well, next time ask about something happy. Butterflies or ice cream or ladies' underwear. You know, happy. Well, gotta go. Watch the ice.
We got married in a fever, hotter than a pepper sprout. We've been talking about Jackson ever since the fire went out. I'm going to Jackson, I'm gonna mess around. Yeah, I'm going to Jackson, look out Jackson Town.
We'll go.
An
I'm gonna snowball, Jackson.
See if I can.
When I breeze into that city, people gonna stoop and bow. All them women gonna make me teach them what they don't know how. I'm going to Jackson. You turn loose of my coat, 'cause I'm going to Jackson.
Goodbye, that's all she wrote. But they laugh at you in Jackson, and I'll be dancing on a pony cake. They'll lead you round town like a scalded hound with your tail tucked between your legs. Yeah, go to Jackson, you big talking.
That's a fact. Yeah, we're going to Jackson. Ain't never coming back. Well, we got married in a fever, hotter than a pepper sprout. Honey, we've been talking about Jackson.
Tea. The grounds in this cup of coffee might numb the dull pain in my jaw if a few fall just right into the hole in the back left molar. I smell breakfast cereal and oat milk. The afternoon will be with black tea, maybe green mint. At night, some pretzels and hard cider while watching the game or a good documentary. Is this all free?
Thank God for fermentation, fermentation for the wine. Thank wine for conversation with these relatives in law of mine. Thank these relatives for you, babe. Thank you for the bouncing boy, doing the best that he can do to keep this family entertained as it navigates the treacherous waters of talk and smart. All this of all Thanksgiving between, even though weather can go from zero to all out brown. In sync, it's just listen, man. Kind of a warm November, got you in the climate change again. Why you gotta be out doom and gloom? Ooh, or at least no one's mentioned the giant elephant in the room. Oops. Past better fill your glass. She used me in and for the long haul. On this of all Thanksgiving Day, even our sports can't go from zero to all out wrong. In seconds, be careful. Have you ever spent time in Cleveland?
No.
South side of Chicago?
No.
St. Louis?
No.
Ever heard about a fella named Ricketts?
Yes.
Anything to do with his politics?
No.
How about them? Cubs. How about them Cubs? Just don't you mention the giant elephant. I mentioned it once and I think I got away with it. Just say, hey, what giant elephant in the room?
And there you have it, episode 439 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Nico Galianiotis, our associate producer, Dr. Michael Pavese, actor extraordinaire, Dominic Azzarelli, and these musical artists, Thelonious Monk, Frank Sinatra, Bedouin, Jeffrey Dean Foster, Johnny and June Carter Cash, Chris Teal, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard II. And of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's do our best with this time. Take care.